And now to college admissions. Your thoughts on the news out of the College Board this week that the SAT will be shortened from 3 hours to 2. It'll go all digital. Do you remember sitting for the SAT or another standardized test? What was it like? Do you get anxiety when taking standardized exams? Do you think that they should be a factor in college admissions? 800-642-1234. Nick Anderson covers higher ed for The Washington Post. Nick, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, Kate.
Good morning. Give us a sketch here as to what is changing about the SAT.
Sure. Well, it's basically a format issue. The format had been for basically forever pencil and paper and
bubbles.
Bubbles, but filling out bubbles on the answer sheet and having sharpened number two pencils, not mechanical pencils, but number two pencils, and having good erasers and sort of having a mindset that that you're good not only at answering the test, but filling out the bubbles on the answer sheet for an extended period of time. There's a certain kind of focus that is required to do that, and that's been part of the SAT and ACT experience. ACT is the rival college admission test. Don't forget about that. There's another test out there. So now that the SAT has said it's going digital, here's what that means. The test will be provided on a laptop or a computer, not at home, but in a proctored environment, typically at a local school. You might have your own laptop, which would be outfitted with special software, or you might use a school-provided device, or if you don't have either of those, the College Board says it would lend you a laptop or a device to take the test. The test would roll out on computer first internationally in spring of 2023, and then domestically in the United States in spring of 2024. So that's the schedule for it. A couple of notes about the change in format. It will be shorter. It will be significantly shorter. It has been 3 hours, at least 3 hours for a long time, sometimes longer than that.
Mm-hmm.
But now it will be about 2 hours. And it will have adaptive questions, which is going to be a very interesting thing. What that means is the first section of questions that you answer will be determinative of the second kind of questions that you answer on, say, the math part of the test or the reading and writing part of the test.
Ah, so it will adjust or adapt to how you're doing.
Yeah, that's a big deal. I think people will be very interested in how that works and what that means for your score ultimately. So those are a few of the highlights.
What about calculators?
Yeah, calculators have long been allowed on the test, except there have been parts of the SAT that are no calculator. And so the idea behind the no calculator section was, show us your stuff without any mechanical help. Now, the new SAT revision, once it takes effect, will allow the calculator throughout the math portion of the test. There won't be any distinction between calculator or no calculator. You can use it the whole time.
Will it be difficult or cumbersome to take the test online? Because I've also heard reports from the College Board that there will be less fatigue factor in this test.
Yeah, I think that remains to be seen. Obviously, if the test is shorter, that's less cumbersome.
Mm-hmm.
There are potential glitch issues here where, computers can malfunction in ways that pencil and paper don't. I think they'll have to have an eye on that. The College Board says that it's making the program durable to last through those kinds of glitches so that your test would not be spoiled if there is some kind of outage in connectivity or if your computer turns off accidentally. But that's, I think, something to keep an eye on is will the test have technical bumps? Another more broader thing to keep an eye on is, is the test in going digital, is it going to be, is that format going to be equitable?
Mm-hmm.
Will different kinds of students have similar experiences in taking the test that way, TBD.
I'm wondering the why, because, you know, I think that the College Board was feeling pressure to make the SAT more accessible, less of a giant pressure headache on students who are going through this. And as we have seen, colleges navigating away from the SAT and the ACT, do you think that forced this change?
Yeah, I think that's a great point. There's two answers that come to mind immediately about why. Number one is kind of the world is going digital, and isn't there a certain inevitability about that? You know, I do my work digitally. You probably do a lot of your work digitally, right? So, and students are getting more digital in their class assignments. You know, a lot of schoolwork is done digitally now that didn't used to be done digitally in the past. So there is that. But there is a very important backdrop to all of this, and that is that the testing system is under great challenge. The pandemic led universities and colleges across the country to halt or suspend their test score requirements for admission. Certainly the University of Wisconsin is one of those in your state, and that has actually been extended through early 2025. I spoke with the admissions director at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. He's very interested to see how this test optional period works for the state flagship there. And you know, so as schools are suspending their testing requirements, they're waking up to the question of, well, are these tests necessary at all? And that is, you know, a big issue. There have always been critics of the SAT who say, you know, it doesn't really serve much purpose. It's not as predictive of college performance as you suspected, as people claim it would be. It is really a hurdle, not help in getting a read on whether students are college ready. And so there is that argument. People who hold that view say that grades and transcripts are much more important, how tough the classes are that you took in high school.
But I've always heard the pushback, too, that these tests level the playing field, especially for students of color, because there's much more emphasis on grades when you don't have the standardized exams in play, and grading comes with bias.
Yeah, and right now we're seeing essentially a major experiment nationwide with colleges being test optional about that could help settle this argument. So we'll see, you know, how students do, whether they submitted test scores or not, and whether that was predictive in some different way for the different groups when they went into their first year of college. This experiment is live right now. But yes, the idea of the test is to uncover talent. The idea of the test is to confirm that your grades really were good. The idea of the test is to spot academic potential and to level the playing field. But there are many questions about whether the ideals of that are true in reality.
And I've been so curious to ask you this. I'm wondering if you think that the trend of test optional that we're seeing at so many institutions, was that going to be coming anyway, or was that hastened by the pandemic? Or if the pandemic didn't happen, would colleges still be wedded to the ACT and SAT for entrance?
Yeah, I think the pandemic was a game changer. There certainly was a test optional movement that was slowly and steadily gaining strength around the country. I could point to many prominent colleges that have been thinking about test optional before the pandemic. In fact, and some did go test optional, like the University of Chicago. It went test optional in 2018. Well, that was before the pandemic. And that's a very exclusive school. So there are examples of test optionality that predate the pandemic. But no, the pandemic really flipped the switch and said to colleges, okay, not only is it acceptable to be test optional, but it's pretty much mandatory to be test optional for these first couple of years because the testing system was so inaccessible to so many students.
Nick Anderson covers higher ed for The Washington Post as we get an update on changes to college admissions in these times. Your thoughts on the SAT and the admissions process that you see, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're talking about college admissions with veteran education journalist for The Washington Post. Nick Anderson is here. What about the fraught question about whether race should be a factor in college admissions? Still time, 800-642-1234. Nick Anderson with us for a few more minutes. I want to look at the U.S. Supreme Court recently announcing it would review lawsuits against Harvard and UNC Chapel Hill over how those schools consider race in accepting students. What are these cases about?
Yeah, these are really interesting cases because they challenge the idea that has been accepted Supreme Court precedent for decades, that it's okay within certain limits to consider race in reviewing an application to college or university. The Supreme Court has said since 1978, at least, that yes, you may consider race. You can't have specific numerical quotas set aside for certain races or ethnicities. That's unconstitutional, according to the Supreme Court, but it is allowed to consider it within certain guidelines. And so now, with a new Supreme Court majority, comes another challenge to this idea, and we'll see what happens. The court is going to hear arguments in this, we believe, in the fall term, and it could shake up college admissions in a significant way.
In what way? What impact do you see happening on higher ed if these policies are overturned?
Well, many college admission leaders, public and private, believe that it is important to consider race as one factor among many in order to achieve a diverse class, a diverse student body on campus. When you think about it, colleges have an interest in not only in teaching students specific curriculum areas, but in teaching students about the world. And part of the world is, you know, if your classmates may look different than you do, if they have different backgrounds than you do. And so when they assemble a class, they're looking not only at how well you did in school, but also that diversity element that may sort of question your own background a little bit and give you cause to sort of see the world in a different way. Mm. That's the idea behind having diverse campuses. And to have diverse campuses takes work. There are different ways to achieve diversity, but one of the most direct ways to achieve diversity, and a lot of people say the most efficient way, is to consider it as one factor among many.
And we are out of time. Nick, thank you for joining us.
Okay.
Nick Anderson covers higher ed for The Washington Post. More than 10,000 people in Wisconsin have died from COVID, and this month's spike in infections saw more Wisconsinites hospitalized with the disease than at any time since the pandemic started. And this week, WPR is sharing stories of how the pandemic has been felt by Wisconsinites in their own words.
My name's Jackie Cutts, and I currently live in La Crosse, Wisconsin. I worked frontline from a public health standpoint on pandemic response for 2020 and all through 2021. You work all the time and you think about it when you're not working. And it was kind of this all-encompassing thing where you just want to help people and save lives and try to guide the community through this really intense, awful experience, but then find that the very people you're trying to help, some of them are the people who don't just not want help, but they hate you for it. I still have no regrets, and I'm fiercely proud of the work that I did with my team in 2021. But there's only so many times you can, you know, be swore at and yelled at and called names and receive death threats. You know, there's only so much of that before it kind of starts to wane on you, even if you know that what you're doing is the right thing.
My name is Kyle from DeForest, Wisconsin. I live with my wife and my two-year-old daughter. When the pandemic began, we did only want to see people outside. So we were outside on our patio. My wife and I had chairs on one side with our daughter, and my mother and my stepfather were on the other side. And that, I'm sure, was very heartbreaking that she couldn't hold her granddaughter. She didn't want to wear a mask. My mother and my sisters like to live their lives as if COVID-19 isn't really happening. So every time that we visited since then, it was the same thing. We have to be outside. And that was fine until the winter months hit. At that point, the vaccines were just coming out. And I was so excited. But then after talking to my sister, my mom decided, no, we're too hurt. We haven't seen our granddaughter or niece in 6 months. We don't think you're ready. And I couldn't believe it. I knew I was causing pain, but I just didn't know how hurt they were.
My name is Marita Stolenwerk. I have 3 children, a 5th grader and 2 4th graders, and I currently live in Brookfield, Wisconsin. During the pandemic, I was a consultant for a national firm, and when I heard that we were going to lock down, I went to go talk to my manager and I cried. I said, I don't know how I'm going to do this and have the kids at home. I remember I was rehearsing to give a presentation with my colleagues, and my daughter sat behind me and screamed because she needed my help before she could submit an assignment, and I couldn't help her because I was busy. So in December of 2020, I decided that I would apply for another opportunity. And I felt very conflicted about leaving the position that I was in. I had worked really hard to be at that position, but I felt like I was failing in so many ways. It was a little bit of a pay cut, but it is more manageable in terms of me being able to be engaged with my family.
Some people interviewed for the story shared their experiences with WPR's Wisconsin. You can read and hear more stories about the pandemic's effect on Wisconsinites at WPR.org. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.